Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Back in the game. Hello, welcome to London.
Thank you, Ned.
Stroke Paris, Paris-Nice, or yeah, wherever we really
thank
are.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
It is, isn't it? Genuinely is.
Yeah, it's really lovely. We're in our old faithful booth.
Yep. I'm with on the right-hand side, you're on the left-hand side. Standard.
It's just what
we have
do.
Totally fallen into that routine, haven't we?
Yeah.
I think it would actually like slightly upset and baffle us if we were ever placed.
It's like pilots. The captain sits in the left-hand seat.
Well, so I'm the co.
You're the boss.
First officer.
That's true.
I'm the navigator.
Yeah, you are the navigator.
You've got
the controls.
I'm the navigator.
You're doing the work. And I'm just monitoring.
Plotting the course.
Yeah, I'm kind of doing macro stuff.
Yeah.
Here if you need me.
Yeah.
No, it's good to be here, Ned. It's
I have to do all the things. Sorry to extend the metaphor beyond what its actual purpose is. But I have to do all the things like, so ladies and gentlemen, the emergency. No, welcome. We'll be taxiing off fairly soon. Yeah. The good news is our slot is still available and we'll be pushing back. That's the word they use.
Pushing back.
We'll be pushing back fairly soon.
And you can handle if there's a delay. You can tell
the bad passengers.
Yeah. Over to First Officer Balting.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good though.
But I'd like to congratulate you on slipping in a fabulous play on words pun today.
Decline.
Arvid. Yeah.
I can't believe I did it actually.
They may have edited it out.
They may have.
No, surely not. It was too good.
Yeah.
So Arvid Decline is a sprinter for Tudor.
For Tudor.
He's doing very well in UAE. Got a couple of second places. Today was a sprint stage.
Yeah.
Supposed to be.
Yeah.
And it was, but a very different sprint. And old Arvid got dropped.
Yeah.
And he did a fabulous play on his surname.
Well, before he got dropped, we'd already anticipated the moment when he might get dropped. Because
he'd already been dropped.
Because he'd already been dropped. And we discussed, actually, when we weren't commentating, when we were just waiting to commentate.
We were doing our fun commentating.
I said decline. Will he decline the opportunity to sprint? Or will it be? And then we got an whole riff about authorization declined.
Permission declined.
Permission declined. And then you came up with a brilliant decline and fall. Which would have worked great if we'd, you know, been on a shot of him, but then he fell. Decline and fall.
The decline and fall of Arvid.
And then we decided that's exactly the kind of pun that we wouldn't use because we're better than that.
Because we're bigger than that.
We're bigger than puns on riders' names.
We decided
quite specifically that, A, we're better than that, and B, if a commentator like Robbie McEwen...
We'll just say it once.
Robbie McEwen himself.
Robbie McEwen. The father of Ewan McEwen.
If he'd come up with the idea of decline and fall or decline, permission declined, he would have not only run with it, he would have gone with it eight or ten times.
He'd have used two or three different versions.
Yep.
He'd have kept coming back to it. Even in the post-show analysis, he would have brought it up, even though it's totally irrelevant because he was an irrelevance to the race.
But he would have just been so chuffed with it.
He'd have chuffed it. He'd have loved it.
And somehow we found that so funny that when we actually did the commentary, I went for it.
I know.
And I just actually said,
I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, and you gave me the little thumbs up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So proud.
Because punning's not great, is it?
No, but sometimes it's worth it.
We're looking at an aerial shot here of, what's the name of the finish town?
The start and finish town?
It's called...
Les Moureaux. In the département of Yvelines, where Paris-Nice always begins, right?
Paris-Nice... Always,
yeah, always it does. In like always, it's that. It's
but
never
isn't
kind
that
of
in yeah, yeah. It does, but normally in nicer places than this.
Yeah, but I kind of quite like the fact that they, you know, obviously they tend to pick the nicer places, don't they? Because that's
they do.
They're kind of like the way that cycling works.
Yeah,
but nice is all relative, isn't it? This is people's. It's where people live. This is people's homes, and Les Moureaux is a big conurbation. Full of kind of social housing and tower blocks. It's a banlieue in the sort of strictest sense of the Parisian banlieue with a real subculture, big immigrant communities and all that sort of thing. And quite interesting to have a bike race start and stop there. And I found out two more facts about Les Moureaux that I didn't quite get a chance. Well, I got a chance to say one of them on the coverage, but it's worth reiterating that it is twinned with Margate.
That's good.
Have you ever been to Margate, David?
I don't know, Ned.
Where is Margate?
On the coast.
Which coast?
Essex?
No.
Kent?
Yes.
Yes.
It's all right. It's good. And the other thing that might interest you more than that is that it is linked with the European Space Agency, which goes back to the origins of our Never Strays Far podcast.
Nanterre.
Oh, there's Nanterre. There's an aerial shot of Paris.
Eiffel Tower.
Tour Eiffel. Oh, beautiful day, isn't it? Sun's coming out all of a sudden. Nanterre's grown enormously, hasn't it?
It has, yeah.
The amount of skyscrapers. Anyway, yeah, it's linked with the European Space Agency, which is interesting that we're talking about space, because I was writing, sorry, this is a bit of a digression, but I was writing a thing relatively recently about podcasting, going right back to the days of the real Peloton with Matt Rendell and Ned Bolton.
Oh yeah, because you were founding fathers.
No one had done a cycling podcast before me and Matt.
So right. Imagine if you kept going.
Well, we'd be in prison.
Yeah, true, actually.
We were just saying some outrageous things. Mm. And then, of course, and then you and I, so before Never Strays Far, we had a year of Revuelta.
That was very good. Enjoyed Revuelta.
Well, that was where it was. This Never Strays Far was born.
It was, yeah.
Because we started doing it during the Vuelta, we're doing this, Paris-Nice, like after commentating a stage, and deciding we hadn't talked enough and we wanted to talk about other stuff that wasn't necessarily related to bike racing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for some reason, in that first season of Revuelta...
Oh, yeah, we had our...
Into science.
Oh, what's his name?
John Noonan.
John Noonan.
Dr. John Noonan.
Our correspondent.
Our astrophysicist correspondent from Texas or New Mexico. Or
John, if you're listening, we miss you.
We miss you.
Yeah.
And I remember, I was trying to remember exactly what... We actually got him on the pod, didn't we?
We did.
I was trying to remember what he was talking about. I think he was talking about crazy stuff like asteroid. Like he was into identifying Earth-threatening asteroids in dark and deep space, plotting their course and then trying to figure out how to divert them from colliding with planet Earth.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast yesterday and it was really interesting with a guy called, I think, David Knight. Anyway, it was talking about what is wealth. And he was saying, well, wealth is knowledge because it's ideas. So, this is an example he had. It's an asteroid is worthless until somebody has the idea that perhaps you could mine asteroids. Perhaps it's gold on asteroids. And all of a sudden, an asteroid that's not worthless becomes amazingly kind of valuable because then people start looking into it, doing research. Well, perhaps that's a possibility. So, all of a sudden, that idea carries a lot of wealth. I thought that was really interesting that knowledge is wealth. Anyway, just total digression there.
Well, it's not a total digression. Talking about asteroids.
True.
Although the thing is, I don't. I've always thought mining the moon and mining asteroids.
Seems very expensive. We'd have to have used most of the resources up on our own little planet. And then still doesn't make much sense to me. But we can't really get people into space.
No.
It costs a lot of money.
I know. Isn't it mad that they tried to send the Americans tried to send an unmanned spacecraft to the moon the other day.
That went well.
And it didn't go well, did it? Tipped over or something. Is it dead? Have they lost contact with it?
Don't know. There's been a few of those recently.
It messed up, didn't it?
Still pretty hard.
But isn't that nuts that like 55 years ago they were able to do that?
I know. It's wild.
But then I read somewhere an explanation for why that is explicable. Like why are we worse at doing moon stuff now, 55 years?
Tell me.
It's quite simple.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to actually say because it was analog and they had to just reduce it down to first principles and make it as simple as possible.
In a way, well, they were working with the technology that was available to them. But
which was very limited.
By today's standards, I guess. The sense in which it wasn't limited is this, and this is the difference. It was Kennedy, right?
Yeah.
And subsequent presidents after Kennedy. Who came next after Kennedy?
LBJ.
LBJ, maybe? Yeah, LBJ. Yeah. So during those presidencies, and before that even, the NASA were devouring some colossal percentage of
4%
American
GDP.
I mean, just double digits, if not more. Like,
20% GDP.
Like, absolute crazy stuff.
Yeah.
When you consider that, you know, that there's a discussion about whether or not there should be 2.5% of GDP spent on our entire defense budget.
Yeah.
Like, back then, they would develop, you know, devoting a kind of like quarter of American wealth to the space program. Huh. So that was their doping.
Yeah.
Like that's how it just kind of got accelerated to something great. And they did this thing. And then they went, well, we've done that now. And then it went back to something reasonable, like not very much percent. And now it's a struggle.
Now it's privateers.
Kind of interesting. I thought that was quite interesting.
That's very fascinating.
But to bring it back to Paris-Nice.
Yes.
Les Moureux, keep having to look at my notes, keep forgetting it, has a link with the European Space Agency.
What is it?
Ariane space rockets.
Oh, yeah.
I think their base or their headquarters or their technological development center is in Lemoore.
Well, there you go.
Which is twinned with Margate. Which famous British poet wrote, "On Margate Sands, I can connect nothing with nothing"? Chris.
Hello.
This is Chris podcasting to the world.
Oh, fantastic. My debut. Are you actually podcasting now?
What do you want us to do?
I would like you to do...
This is the magic of how the highlights program is going, because occasionally we need to do a little extra bit of...
It's like you're still here.
I would like you to give us a new outline for part three, because we changed what was in part three.
So this is what we have to deal with.
I know.
We do perfect seamless commentary, and then the editors decide, you know, to make it all tricky. What have I got to say?
Well, I don't know what you've got to say exactly, but basically it's when Tergis gets away. So we just need to sort of like mop that up a bit more quickly. Because there are a few questions to David, and also I'm not sure if you could hear James talking to you. So I was saying we need to get an out. We didn't get one. So we kind of like, then we got a clean in for part four. So part four came in at 8 kilometres to go instead of coming in at 15 kilometres to go.
If you okay. Makes sense. So a little line. We'll press pause on this podcast recording and I'll do a little line about Tergis. Thanks, Chris.
See.
Yeah.
So this is where the first officer kicks in. Because the captain just has no idea what Chris just said.
I didn't understand.
Good luck.
No idea. Well, I'm just going to pause the podcast now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, here goes then. This is the little outro for part three or whatever it is. So, round about 9 kilometres to go. Can Anthony Tergis stay off the front and produce something very special here on the opening stage of Paris-Nice?
Lovely, thanks.
It's a take. Thank you. Right, back in the podcast. Absolutely nailed that. That was no problem at all. Just dealt with that. But that's... I'm not even sure whether we should have included that in the pod, because that's like casting a bit too much daylight, where daylight doesn't need to...
No, forward. I think our listeners understand what we do. We've given away more than that in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's to our detriment, because it's removing the magical...
The mystery.
The mystery and the allure that we carry.
Yeah. This is what I'm saying. I think it might have hurt our brand.
Oh, us, not the actual production.
No, just us. Just think about us.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right then. Yeah.
That's too late. I can't be bothered to edit it out. Anyway, I think Chris would be disappointed, because he's looked quite pleased to be making his podcast debut. Yeah. And also, he'll probably download it now, which is another download for us.
That's good. And he might sell a few friends, word of mouth.
That's our
marketing for the day.
But where I left off was, which British poet wrote, "On Margate Sands, I can connect nothing with nothing"?
Larkin.
It's a good guess. Similarly miserable, but from a different era of miserableness. But the greatest poet of all, male poet, T.S. Eliot.
T.S. Eliot.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he wrote The Wasteland, in part at least, in Margate.
Did he?
Where he rented a house in Margate and he spent a season there. And I think there's a bench in a bus shelter, or a kind of shelter that's built up on the embankment overlooking the shingly beach at Margate, where, or sandy beach indeed, as the name suggests, where he obviously dreamt up that line, "On Margate Sands, I can connect nothing with nothing."
That's...
I don't really know what it means, but I think it's beautiful.
I think it's beautiful.
But it's a lot of Eliot stuff is... Don't really know what it means, but it's beautiful.
I love Eliot as well.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's one of my favourite quotes comes from Eliot.
What's that?
It's the one where it concludes with... Let me go ahead around it.
David's doing this without Google, by the way. This is pure memory function. He's actually wiping his...
I can't remember it under the pressure. But it's to...
Give us a rough idea. I might know it.
To end where you begun and know it for the first time.
I don't know that. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds very...
Yeah.
Eliot-like.
Yeah, yeah. It's very good. Yeah. Anyway, shame I can't remember off the top of my head.
Would it have been worth it after all? After the tea and cakes and ices, to force the moment to its crisis, to roll the universe into a ball and roll it to some, roll it to some overwhelming question. Oh, do not ask what is it. Let us go and make our visit.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, he's very good.
It's very good, wasn't he?
Yeah, the winter evening settles down with, this is good for weather like this, the winter evening settles down with smell of steak in passageways. 6 o'clock. The burnt out ends of smoky days, and now a gusty shower wraps the grimy scraps of withered leaves about your feet and newspapers from vacant lots.
Chapeau, Ned.
Thank you very much. And that was without the Google?
That was without the Google.
Yeah, there's a lot of Eliot that's kind of like sat quite deep in my consciousness somewhere. Yeah.
Wow,
I liked
good.
T.S. Eliot. Yeah. Should we talk about the bike race?
Yeah, we should. Should we do what we didn't do in the commentary and mention who's here for GC?
Primoz Roglic, who's
Remco
wearing
Evenepoel.
Remco Evenepoel. So Roglic making his debut for Bora Hansgrohe, and us having to get used to
the fact very different
shape shifting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Initially he did, but now I've seen him in one race.
He's not done a morph. He's not done a.
He's not done a full morph.
No.
Remco did a characteristically aggressive race today, didn't he?
Lighting up. Egan Bernal was on fire.
That was my biggest takeaway from today.
Matching Remco,
I think.
Even launching himself.
Yeah.
So Egan's seems to be back and loving racing. And
yeah.
And not kind of climbs, not a terrain where you would expect him to be so aggressive.
Yeah.
So he's clearly, because that was very explosive, very big power stuff.
Well, maybe if he does get back, you know, physically and psychologically to something like where he was when he left off, maybe he will have, by dint of having to be through, go through what he's been through, maybe he'll reinvent himself slightly as a racer.
But he's always a super aggressive racer. We've kind of, I suppose that's because he almost set that kind of tone, didn't he? Now we're accustomed to it with Pogacar and Evenepoel, but it was Bernal that was doing those kind of crazy attacks before.
I mean, I feel Egan Bernal in all sorts of ways, because he's almost like, he's the forgotten great. You know, when you talk about the big six now.
Yeah.
You know, if you extend it to the non-GC riders, Van der Poel and Van Aert as well, and then you include Vingegaard, Roglic, Evenepoel, and Tadej Pogacar, who was half decent at Strade Bianche. The name who really should be in that group, but isn't for obvious reasons, is Bernal, because where he left off before the accident, he was
immense.
He was going to be he's won the Tour de France and the Giro d'Italia.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
It's crazy, and yet he never gets a mention now, and it's kind of like, so that was brilliant. And I do remember like talking about his racing style. There was a moment when he won the Giro on that stage, because I was commentating on it, where I thought like something changed with Bernal, and he attacked and won the stage, and I think it was the day he actually took the jersey as well, on this incredibly steep ramp up the last couple of hundred metres of a sort of medium mountain stage in the pouring rain, on a gravel section as well.
Oh, I remember that.
And it was violent. Mm. And it kind of unleashed a sort of violence in and a lack of timidity, a kind of aggression in Bernal that I hadn't hitherto seen. I'd always seen him as a slightly cautious Ineos rider, you know, for want of a better word.
Defensive,
you know, don't lose the race, but don't win it either in that sense, you know. And that day he just went out and won it. And so it was a little bit reminiscent of that, you know, the way he... And also, I watched a bit of El Gran Camino. I don't know if you watched any of that stage
race. No, it was UAE.
I mean, Jonas, frankly... pumped everybody, didn't he? Won three stages, all the uphill finishes, and smashed the GC. But Bernal was in the mix. You know, he was dropped. He couldn't match Jonas, but no one can at the moment, I don't think, in races like that. But he was in it.
Yeah.
He's finished on the podium, and that's... what did he? Yeah, I think it was.
He did.
And that's very different from anything we've seen from Bernal's subsequent to the accident.
So Bernal's back.
He's getting back, isn't he?
He's getting back.
So that was a really good takeaway from today.
That's great news.
A nice little scrap from the breakaway for King of the Mountains points.
That was good. Nice little bit of bike racing.
Yeah.
Old Ruch. 197. He's a big
impressed
lad.
You're just impressed by height, aren't you?
I'm just impressed by height. Well, pro cyclists at a tall just are so anomalous. Or less anomalous now, but...
Who's taller than you in the peloton when you were racing?
Van Someren.
Johan van Someren. He was a giant.
Johan van Someren.
Michael Scher?
Maybe, yeah. Or the same. Looked taller than me. Had long legs.
Also, in the bunch, he kind of sat super tall, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Really upright position as well.
But no, they do seem to be. We're watching the sprint now between. But yeah, EF, we're just kind of in. Actually, they don't have anybody here, so they're having to race like that. Two up attack with Bergodeau.
Oh, they've got Uran, but they didn't have a sprinter, you're right.
Yeah.
So
Uran's kind of.
Last year.
Yeah, he's done, isn't he?
Yeah, he's kind of done.
He's done.
Jonas Rutsch was wearing, he finished in the King of the Mountains jersey at the end of the day, he was wearing a belly band that had
What? Yeah, I still can't get my head around that. That is super baffling. That was the baffler of the day.
Jonas's belly band.
Yeah.
It's basically like a black...
It's like a running band, like you wear when you're running to carry your phone.
It was like a fanny pack.
Yeah, but a narrow one.
It wasn't really. I just wanted to say that because it makes me laugh. The Americans. Yeah. Things
like that. Yeah. Coy's got the white jersey, the green jersey, and the yellow jersey.
Yeah, yeah. And you made a... You don't often make predictions.
I don't make predictions, but I made an absolutely banging one today.
Not on air, because we don't do predictions on air.
No, it's not our job. But I did say that Olav Coy would win off the wheel of Mads Pedersen. And I said that like 50 Ks out.
And that is...
And it's like gamblers, isn't it? You say the ones you want that you kind of win. Because I've done a lot of predictions that don't come through quite as perfectly as that. But I'm very proud of that one.
Yeah.
I had full double fist salute behind you as you were commentating on it. That's all I was interested in. Like, the prediction actually came true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite difficult. It's quite dangerous, actually, as a commentator when you're invested in the race outcome. I mean, in quite a trivial sense there, you just wanted to be proven right. Yeah. You don't have any great emotional connection with Olav Coy.
And you know what's quite good about it? You know what's quite good about it as well? Yeah. Because obviously I was on live mic when I made that prediction.
Yeah.
Let's make sure we're not on live mics now. and we're now with ITV production, so it's a whole new team of people here.
Yeah.
And at the first race, with us commentating, I make a prediction like that, like 50Ks out.
Yeah.
So,
but you didn't say it on air though, did you?
No, but they all heard
it. They heard it. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
They'll have heard it.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, Miller knows what he's talking about.
It's a good job we stuck with him because we were thinking of binning him off. Yeah. Oh, I shouldn't have told you that. No. They said, don't tell him, but no. No, they were never. That was never. Yeah, no, you've done well there, David.
Thanks, Ned. Impressive. It's the little things. It's the little things that matter.
Yeah.
How was the darts?
It was all right, but you're talking about making predictions, yeah? Yeah. And gambling. You mentioned gambling earlier.
Yeah.
I had a gamble.
So you made a prediction.
I made a predictive gamble
and backed
it with money behind it.
Money prediction.
And I won't say which player it is because in the very small...
That's what you call gambling from now on, a money prediction.
Money prediction.
I made a money prediction on who?
Well, I'm not going to say the name because it would be unethical. Well, it's unethical anyway, but it would be evidenced unethics on my part. I don't know if it's unethical. I'm not in the game, so I'm just...
Well, it's a money prediction, it's not.
It's a money prediction. I made a money prediction, but it's quite funny based on... So I've just come from... The 3 days of the UK Open, but I only did the first 2 days. And today, as we record, it's the quarterfinals, semifinals, and final.
Mm-hmm. Right?
The final will be in the evening between two players. Luke Littler, the teenager, is there, obviously, and all that sort of thing. Anyway, one of the top players, not one of the top favourites, but a top player. Huh? Like, not one of the podium, not for the podium, maybe, but maybe a Yates.
Yeah? Yates.
A Yates. Come on, that's a bit disrespectful to the Yates brothers. Who's just outside the... A Godu.
Godu, nice.
Physically very different from David Godu. But a Godu-like figure in the darts world, yeah? I noticed, he was staying in the same hotel as us, and I noticed on the Thursday night before the tournament got underway.
You felt something.
I'll tell you exactly what I felt. And then the next night, after he'd won his opening match or two, and he was back to the same hotel, and then the next day, I noticed that this certain, let's call him David Godu of the darts world, was not drinking.
Ooh.
And he was walking around with a Diet Coke. Mm. And this is a man who doesn't do Diet Coke. Normally, casual 27 pints of lager would be like the maximum sort of performance-enhancing position that he'd take vis-a-vis his darts. And often this particular player, who has won big tournaments in the past, but recently just falls away a bit towards the back end of the tournament, you might think that that might be something to
tell.
Do with it. Yeah, tell. So I noticed that he wasn't drinking. And it was playing really well as well. And I thought, maybe the penny's dropped with him, that actually one way of throwing darts more accurately is not to have 27 pints of lager.
Mm.
And so I went onto a money prediction website and handed them £20 at 14-1, which during the course of stage one, Paris-Nice, I lost.
Ugh, Ned.
Yeah, because he lost.
It was a bit of a, it was a, I'd say... It was a risky one because if he's built his career on that habit of consuming vast amounts of
alcohol,
yeah, perhaps that's how he rolls.
Yeah, it's kind of how darts roll. Yeah. Actually, it's quite interesting with darts because darts is darts in 2006 got signed up to UK Sport. In other words, it got recognised as a sport for the first time, and that has all sorts of implications for the governing body of darts, the BDC, not least, I think it becomes I think I'm right in saying that if you're recognised as a sport, you get exempt from VAT and stuff like this.
Okay.
So there's kind of like financial reasons why it's actually quite beneficial. But then there's also responsibilities and structures that got imposed on you at that point by signing up. One of which is you have to be subject to an anti-doping regime when you get recognised as a sport. So the, one of the first darts tournaments I ever worked at, you know, I was stunned when the back door, there was a knock at the back door of the stadium and I kind of opened it up and there was two gentlemen in a suit with a briefcase saying, we're here from anti-doping.
Wow. Yeah.
And obviously alcohol is one of the substances that they sort of unticked on the box. So the kind of alcohol's okay, but they're looking more at...
It's not a performance enhancer by their definition.
No, but it clearly is.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Up to a point.
Up to a point. So
like a can and a half of Stella is performance, that extra little bit is kind of starts to...
So all throughout the long, you know, 100-year history of darts, players, because it's born of the pub, players have been trying to find that sweet spot of just kind of where it actually is performance enhancing because it has a kind of inhibiting effect on your
nerves and
all that sort of thing. And so much of it is about the control of the nerves. Mm. And then, you know, obviously it kind of tips over the edge into not terribly
into losing your motor skills.
To the extent that you can't walk.
Yeah.
I've seen that, you know, players come off the hockey having won and, you know, thrown amazing darts and they're unable to talk. So, you know, should we do an interview with so-and-so? No, I don't think so. Because he can neither walk nor talk and yet can hit, you know, 180 with incredible consummate ease. So it's a bizarre phenomenon. And actually, I think someone should do a PhD on it.
Mm.
But there is now a generation of darts players who are coming, because there's so much money in the game now, who are learning to play darts, not in the pub. At home, on home track, you know, like like cancer. And also in community centres and darts academies up and down the country, who haven't grown up associating the sport directly with alcohol. So this year's World Championship final between Luke Humphries and Luke Littler, I think, was the first ever sober World Cup World Championship final. But that's having a knock-on effect to the older generation who are watching these great young kids and they're going, maybe I don't need 17 pints, you know? So that's quite interesting. But then again, as you say, this particular player might have overdone his kind of stepping back from what made him a great player in the first place. So.
Oh, sorry, lost.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So anyway, welcome back to London.
Yeah, thank you, Ned.
What, you're staying with your sister?
Staying with my sister.
Riding your Brompton in and out?
Riding my Brompton. It was lovely weather today, so I chose to do that.
Went you sport it?
I sported this morning, first thing. I was up very early.
Yeah.
And I'm actually going to be sporting this week. I'll put the link in the show notes because on Tuesday I'm doing a run.
Yeah.
A social. I figured, because I always do my sporting went on tour and kind of mixed running because I don't take my bike everywhere. And I thought, why don't I socialise it a bit?
Yep.
So doing a run from Via in Coldrops Yard at 6 o'clock on Tuesday.
In London, which is by King's Cross.
So doing a 45-minute social run. Please come along. And then I'm going to...
What's a social run?
It's just a nice gentle pace where you can chat.
Okay.
So it's not like intervals and kind of... Yeah.
It's a jog.
It's a jog, Ned.
Yeah.
It's a jog. And then I'm going to explain my sporting club concept that I've got going on. But if anybody wants to come, go into the show notes and sign up because I think that'll be fun. Then I'm going for a bike ride in Regent's Park on Thursday morning.
Similar vibe. But this time on two wheels.
Yeah. I've got to actually socialise. Yeah. Which is my kind of idea of that. So yes, that's good. And... last week I took Archie for his first ever road ride.
Oh, that was interesting. Tell us about that, because he's mad into his mountain biking.
He's mad into his mountain biking, and I've always been hesitant about the road riding thing, simply because I think he's still young, he's 12, and we kind of joke when you see little kids on road bikes, it seems like punishment, cruelty.
Yeah, cruel.
And yet he asked a couple of months ago if he could try road riding, and a friend kind of sorted him out a bike. And we went out for the first time last week, and he just absolutely loved it. And it was strangely emotional for me because I've never even imagined road riding with Archie or Harvey or Maxine, and it suddenly felt right. And it felt and watching him on the bike, he was so natural and just kind of vicariously kind of going, being in it, doing it for the first time again.
Yeah.
And then doing it with me where I can actually guide him and teach him something that I've never been able to teach anybody. Like, I've always helped people, but with my son to actually kind of explain things to him and share all my knowledge and him soak it up. And then on Saturday, we went up, yesterday, Hells Angels, a local climb. And again, he just loved it. And I'm having so much fun doing it with him, which I never imagined.
Yeah.
And what I found strange about it as well, I kind of thought back to when I started. I did it all on my own.
Yeah.
I earned money to get my bikes and then
read magazines. Your dad didn't go out.
Nothing. And And so it was really nice to kind of be doing it with my son and him being riding with me, his dad, and kind of it felt like a real seminal sort of father-son moment.
I bet.
And yeah, which I bet. Probably one of the most kind of touching I've had, I think, since I've had children, which was very unexpected.
Yeah.
And so yeah, very joyful.
And the mad thing is you sent us a little video to the WhatsApp group, and you're right, there's something going on with his pedal stroke and his position that is not a million miles away from you.
Yeah.
And I remember you pointing this out with Stephen Roach and Dan Martin. About that craziness, because if Stephen Roach and Dan Martin are just standing side by side in a room, you think they're just not related.
Nothing.
And put them on a bike and there's something that's...
They've got exactly the same pedal stroke. Bonkers. It's kind of genetic.
And then there's a bit of that with you.
Actually, he's got a very similar pedal stroke. I noticed it when he was really little. I was like, wow, when I was right behind him, I was like... from the videos I've seen of me, and I was like, guy, he looks just like me, the way he pedals. And then, on the road bike, I was just looking at him, and I was like, oh, wow, you've genetically got my pedal stroke.
What do you think it is? Is it the flex of the ankle, or the kind of lower leg?
It just must be morphology and the kind of anatomics, the kind of genetic anatomics that are kind of passed down. And yeah, it's really odd to see when you see yourself kind of pedaling. And he's only little, so I guess it's going to develop. And of course, he mimics.
Yeah.
So he's kind of copying what I do and the cadence and different things, but
certain
things you can't mimic, and a pedal stroke is such a kind of an imprint that you have, almost like a fingerprint.
Sure.
It's kind of everyone has their own pedal stroke, and Archie definitely seems to have my pedal stroke, which is super cute.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're just watching a replay again, the umpteenth replay of Mats Pedersen, who just went, he's just left on the front a bit early, wasn't he? Coy picked him off. And Lawrence Pithy.
Yeah, I know.
Third place.
I don't know Lawrence Pithy.
Mate, he's come from kind of nowhere.
Oh, good.
But the opening weekend, he was right in the thick of it.
Huh?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, we need to talk a little bit about Strade Bianche, don't we?
We do. See, So I'm not on social. I don't have the apps on my phone, but I dip in on the computer to just check things occasionally. And obviously, I was checking yesterday.
I was looking at the darts. So I couldn't do it.
I thought you were going to have it, on.
I was too busy.
Oh,
I caught one. I flicked in, and I think I saw Pogacar off the front on one. I assumed he just attacked.
Yeah.
And it's 60 something kilometers to go. But no.
Because always the polemic is, oh, this is boring. You know?
Yeah. There's big discussions about whether it's boring.
I'm kind of so not.
It's a boring discussion.
It's a boring discussion. But I just think it's such a privilege to witness that.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. Not every race can be a thriller to the line.
No.
There's different kinds of races, and you can appreciate races for the racers in different ways, can't you?
And he kind of totally Babe Ruthed it by kind of pointing to the stands and calling where he was going to attack.
Mate, the top of the Santa Catarina, when he turned right,
and
he saw that little phalanx of press photographers there, he just turned and smiled at them. It's a great picture that.
He's just such a legend. And it's kind of, what's great with this era, we know we often talk about this, but we've got now, you were mentioning Bernal before, we've got Remco Evenepoel, Jonas, Vingegaard, Hansen.
Hansen?
Yeah, because he's taken his wife's name as well.
Oh, mate, you're so much further into this season than I am.
Oh, yeah, his wife.
I didn't know that, Vingegaard Hansen.
Vingegaard Hansen, yeah.
Visma Lisa Bikes Vingegaard Hansen.
Yep.
That rolls off the tongue.
They're all coming out and just hitting out kind of bigger than the other. And it was almost like Pogacar was kind of just going, okay, I see you. I'm going to raise it.
Yeah.
And then I saw some images of kind of the other riders coming across the line, and it was in pieces. And I was just kind of imagining what they must be thinking, because you've just been dying, killing yourself in and out with this whole race. And meanwhile, you hear that Pogacar's 4 minutes up the road.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just amazing. And like you say, it's that picture is just encapsulates him.
Yeah.
Of just smiling.
Yeah.
And kind of just having so much fun.
Well, there's a couple of things. You know, I read that, it didn't reflect very well on the strength of the in-depth of the peloton.
Oh, come
on. And where were the other great, you know, you could say, well, where are the other great, where are the rest of the big six? You know, where's Vingegaard Hansen? Why isn't he? And that does slightly make me inclined to be a bit less excited by Vingegaard Hansen, the fact that he doesn't enter one day races, etc. There's something of an argument there. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, it's not often that, well, it's not it's once in a blue moon that a rider can do something like that, regardless of the strength and in depth of the peloton. You know, and that's, don't tell me that was a weak peloton. I mean, it was, you know, Tom Pidcock, who won it last year, was left floundering in third place.
And Strade Bianche has become such a prestigious race.
Yeah.
There's kind of so many people making that such a big target, and he just makes a mockery of everybody.
Yeah.
In a beautiful way.
Freeboss tweeted that Matt forwarded it to me, that some statistic about his winning margin was bigger than 24 editions of the Tour de France, or no, 50 something editions of the Tour de France, 24 of the Giro and 28 of the Vuelta or something like that. He did it in a one-day race,
wow,
which is a slightly deceptive statistic, but it is still quite fun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that bodes well.
Yeah, it does bode well.
What have we got tomorrow, Ned?
Yeah, but let's cast the thing a little bit further forward. I can only do a little bit further forward. I'll tell you that tomorrow is a vertical line north-south.
Oh, good.
And flat.
So hopefully win.
Olaf Koy.
Yes, normally.
Normally.
Not normal.
But it's one of those ones where Paris-Nice normally gets a bit of crosswinds because it's that, we've spoken about this before, the predominantly westerly winds.
Yeah.
And so the crosswinds come from your right shoulder in Paris-Nice because you're always heading south in a line like that.
Nice.
So, but I don't think the wind is forecast at the moment, which is disappointing.
It's very disappointing.
It's very disappointing because it's proper cabbage patch territory for Paris-Nice tomorrow. Yeah. Then there's a 20-something, 26 kilometres, something like that.
26, yeah.
In rolling-ish. It's not particularly hilly, I don't think. Individual time trial that will be...
It's individual, not team.
Individual.
Is it? I thought I read team. I've obviously need to look more closely.
Wait.
Let's have a look.
Team time? You think it's a team time trial? Well, that would be interesting if it was. I really should know this, shouldn't I? Travis, I've come straight from the darts. That he says, getting his excuses in. Let me just... I'm leafing.
Yeah, it's a team time trial.
Oh, it's a team time trial. David, yeah. You are so much... Now, that is interesting.
That's very interesting.
That is interesting. And it kind of goes some way to explaining some of the team...
it's all making sense now.
It's all making sense.
Yes. What's in your grenadier
team? Jay Vine.
Yeah,
Brandon,
that's why you...
McNulty.
Yeah.
Wow.
Why are they putting all in one race?
Drama's got this amazing team, super team built around him, hasn't he? And Josh Tarling, Jonathan Castroviejo.
Yeah.
Ineos Grenadiers.
That's why they put all their time trialists in one race.
Yes.
Yeah. They weren't chasing individual
quite exciting,
glory.
Isn't it?
That's very exciting. That's a lot better for us as well.
I think so.
Well, because it's much easier to commentate on team time trials. There's less things to commentate on as well.
I can't remember last time. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but I can't remember last time I commentated on a team time trial, actually. But yeah. Oh, that's good.
Yes, that's good. I'm glad I could inform you of that, Ned.
And then after that, there's a... I do know that after that, there's an uphill finish in Beaujolais to Montbrouilly, as in the wine. Bouilly. That
I loved Beaujolais back in the day.
And it just
chilled red.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely. Not a million miles away from that bottle of wine I was telling you about that I was given by
Valenciennes.
Jacques Stoblinski, that
still
chilled
mystery.
Bottle of
Sancerre. I haven't asked you about that yet.
What?
Why you're there and stuff.
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay, cool.
It's got a secret squirrel line. Yeah, I'm writing like, you remember like kids who used to write with their arm around, tucked around their work. So
it's actually still hesitant about it.
Yeah, very. Yeah. Very, yeah. Yeah, don't declare your... suit unless you...
Well, screen's gone dead, Ned.
Dead. I'm a bit embarrassed about not knowing as a team time trial. I'll confess that.
That's why I'm the captain.
And I'm very glad that I didn't say that on air today. Otherwise, Chris would have been poking his head through the door again saying, could you just say that? But without mentioning the team time trial. Mm-hmm. Hey-ho. See you tomorrow.
Hey-ho. See you tomorrow.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.